listen to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to Beer Me on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Jane. During my time in culinary school, I gained an appreciation for good beer and continued my studies in beer at grad school at NYU. Since then, I have been a beer director, beer bar general manager, and I get to continue to explore the beer world with all of you wonderful listeners. Every week, I will have a different guest on the show from different parts of the beer world. From brewers, importers, educators. This will allow us to examine the dynamic world of beer through different lenses. Whether you're new to beer or a seasoned professional, we will have something for you. So today I'm joined in the studio by Josh Chapman. He is the co-founder and head brewer of Black Narrows Brewing Company out of Chincoteague, Virginia. Although it's officially Josh, right?
Officially, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
To those who are in the know.
I getcha. but before we get into that, a quick recap of the weekend. I popped over to Right Proper, the Brooklyn facility, for some beer yoga. I had never done beer yoga before.
What is entailed in beer yoga? Do you actually drink while stretching?
You drink while stretching. And here's the thing. I am an avid hater of yoga.
Okay.
I force myself to do it every week because
okay.
I know it's good for me.
Right.
But I hate it. And this time I'm like nestled among like brewing equipment and that beautiful like cereal smell is in the air and there's beers in front of my mat. And I was like, what have I been doing with my life? Why have I not incorporated beer into every yoga practice?
Sounds like a carrot and the horse sort of situation.
It's amazing. And there's actually like an official like beer sipping pose where you kind of like squat into a ball and then drink some beer.
You've got to be kidding me.
It's fantastic. And I am, every yoga class from now on, you bet your ass, I'm going to fill those aluminum water bottles with beer and, you know, create my own beer yoga.
Well, I mean, it makes you at least mentally feel more flexible anyway, right? So
you're halfway there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm never going back. also went over to Blue Jacket. They're celebrating their 5-year anniversary.
That's crazy.
Big kudos to those guys. Now, you were previously of the Blue Jacket family.
Yeah, we got to, I was part of that opening crew. I was there when, I remember walking in and looking up, you know, to the rafters and there was a mash tun hanging from the ceiling. And you better believe I like tried to figure out what the diameter of, you know, that thing was and back out of the way because I didn't want to be the jerk that was underneath it when it came down. But yeah, we were, I mean, it was, it's incredible that it's already been 5 years since it opened. I mean, it still feels like yesterday that first beers were getting brewed and we were trying to figure out which way the pumps were turning and, you know, it's just insane. And they've been pumping out such incredible beers and it's such a great win for the DC brewing community. I'm so proud of that whole crew. So I had to go by yesterday and get my own little bottle of Double Mexi Radio. So
for sure. And this year is stellar. I mean, I've had a couple of years this year, like just firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
That was really cool to see. And I love their cans. I'm a little obsessed with the can art.
Right. Well, it's such cause we weren't doing that when we were there, you know, we didn't have a canning line. By the time I left, we were just getting the, large format bottles. Those were our growlers at that point because we never filled growlers. So we would do those 750s and we would do the little tags on them and everything. So it's kind of funny being a part of that opening team and then, you know, stepping away and then watching all the things that you hoped to grow into kind of happen. You know, it's awesome to watch it happen, but it's also a little bittersweet. Like, man, oh, that's so awesome. I wish I could be a part of that, you know, sweet Mexican radio label or, you know, the canning line working or whatever. But I mean, the Blue Jacket crew from Greg on down is just, you know, it's such a family and so hospitable that they're always, you know, welcoming. Every time I walk in there, it's cool. You still feel like part of the crew and, you know, get to share in the success.
Oh, yeah.
So they know their role, I feel like, in the DC beer community. So,
yeah, it was definitely a community vibe. Lots of people from the industry there.
Yeah.
And then Nikki and David Nellis were celebrating their 10-year anniversary of Foodie and the Beast. Shout out to them. They did a live show, which is, with everything going on in that space, to execute it as well as they did, I was so impressed. So
yeah, I mean, there's
seasoned professionals.
There's a lot of noises in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
There's more noises in a brewery, and then you add both of them together and say, "Let's do a live radio show." That's pretty impressive. But it was fantastic.
Yeah, so very very cool. Hats off to those guys. And definitely, they're also on Full Service Radio here, Industry Night on Mondays at 5,
awesome.
I believe. Nikki Don't be mad at me if I just got the time wrong. But so yes, for those just tuning in, I am joined with Josh Chapman. He's the co-founder and head brewer of Black Narrows Brewing Company out of Chincoteague, Virginia. Chincoteague, Virginia, most known for all the wild ponies.
Absolutely. And I have to give you kudos for pronouncing that correctly. Not Chincoteague, Chincoteague.
Chincoteague.
That soft SH.
Well, see, here's the backstory here.
Okay.
We're going to dive into my seedy past.
Fantastic.
For 10 years, I played handbells. Yeah. Yeah. That's the proper response.
I tried to hold that in.
No, it's okay.
It's a fantastic and passionate profession, and I applaud you on your pursuit of its excellence.
No, I started when I was 10, and I just didn't stop. But I mean, we played at the Kennedy Center. We played on the Ellipse.
That's awesome.
Yes, but okay. But we went on. We did like a festival. We did like a handbell festival because nerds congregate.
Of course.
You know? And we did one in Chincoteague when I was, I think, in eighth grade. And we all were obsessed with Mr. Whippy.
Oh.
Which is,
that's
an
awesome
ice cream spot.
I love going to Mr. Whippy. They're actually the only place on the island right now in the off season that is open in the morning for coffee, which sounds kind of crazy. But they have a little drive through with coffee and donuts. But I personally am an island creamery guy. And it's, I'm not going to say it's Hatfields and McCoys.
Okay.
But there's definitely two different camps.
I gotcha. So like a UVA Virginia Tech kind of thing.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I totally get it.
Brotherly
totally
love.
It.
I think they might actually be brothers that own the two places too. So that's not a joke. I'm pretty sure they're pretty close.
But yeah, everyone knows Chincoteague for the ponies. Mm-hmm. What was that book? Misty of Chincoteague.
Marguerite Henry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a beautiful, beautiful area.
Yeah.
I have a deep-seated fear of horses, so I go there tentatively.
Yep.
But it's stunning location right on the eastern shore of Virginia, and it isn't exactly a thriving economy.
No.
Yes.
No, not by any means. Accomack County is definitely a more rural and impoverished county in general. Chincoteague is respectively the Golden Goose of Accomack County. And even that being said, it's obviously not, you know, not a high income area. Gross income or average gross income is way below, national average. And it's a tough place to do a lot of things. I mean, it was historically aquaculture, facility. So shellfish and seafood and everything. And a lot of that went by the wayside. There used to be dozens of oyster houses on the island, and now there's basically two. Which is just, I don't know, it's just the way that things go. But there's a lot of empty, spaces and empty buildings. So it's a spot that at least the natural beauty infrastructure is there. And there's actually a lot of tourism infrastructure there as well that I feel like it's got everything it needs to, begin to thrive all over again. It just needs some influx of new blood, basically, which is, part of the reason that we went out there was to take that baton and try to be a next generation of something.
Enter Black Narrow Brewing Company.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you opened the brewery right before New Year's, right?
Yeah, so they always tell you that opening a business takes longer and costs more.
Mm-hmm.
So we anticipated that. And then it was like twice as long and twice as much as both those, things. Anyway, so we had, I think at one point, opening fall 2016 on the website. And then we took that down and put opening soon. Had no idea when soon was. We started to promise people 2017. So we literally, that last week of December, we took Christmas off, and then the next day it was just back, like 16, 17 hour days trying to get that thing busted out because we're like, we have to open in 2017. I don't care if it's 24 hours before it's 2018, but we are opening in 2017. So yeah, barely by the skin of our teeth, but we got it up and open New Year's Eve 2017. So.
And you have very quickly gained some acclaim here. You were named the 2018 Brewery of the Year by the Virginia Restaurant, Lodging, and Travel Association, which is a big deal.
Yeah, no, that was unexpected. Welcomed, obviously. Kind of funny as well. We were laughing because do you have to be open for a year to be Brewery of the Year? Because we are not yet open for a year. But I will say, I think one of the things that we really had going in our favor, that's not something that we apply for. Our local Chamber of Commerce nominated us, unbeknownst to us, which was really kind of them. But part of that award is kind of community input. And my lovely bride, Jenna, she was the kind of formulator of what we call One Local, One Global, which is an initiative that we have where every year we take 10% of our gross beer sales and give them back. 5% go to 12 different local causes, and we highlight each cause monthly. We give the funds out at the end of the fiscal year so that the January cause doesn't get, you know, hosed in August, whatever. But and then 5% goes to a global cause that we change annually. And I really believe that that was the thing that stood out for the VRLTA, which is a fantastic thing to stand out for. And that was all Jen. So it was fantastic to kind of get some recognition for that. It's not about us at all. So I'm not excited for the brewery and for me to get recognition, but if the causes that we're trying to push, I mean, that's the whole goal. Our vision as a brewery is to empower people to affect change in their local and global communities, which doesn't necessarily sound like the vision of a brewery, but we really believe that, you know, we all have things we're passionate about and we're good at doing. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's, you know, making beer and making community spaces. So if we can use beer and community spaces to empower people to affect that change, then that's a life worth living. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah. It's a good day's work, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And 10% sounds very specific. That sounds like tithing.
It is very much for us a tithe. I mean, I was a pastor before I was a chef and then a brewer. It's funny the overlap of all those things. They're they're not dissimilar at all. I helped plant a church out in Denver when Jen and I were first married, which was just an incredible experience. I didn't think anything could be harder than that, but then we had our second child while opening a brewery, so I was vastly wrong.
Corrected.
Yeah.
That is fascinating. So I, before culinary school, I was looking to pursue that path.
No way.
Seaway. And then I watched my mother go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to Wesleyan Seminary here in Washington, okay. D.C. And, you know, has been a pastor ever since in the United Methodist Church. And after watching her go through it and watching what she actually has to deal with as a pastor.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm maybe not cut out for this.
Yeah, no, it's a tough place to be personally because I love the church. I love its mission. So it was a hard thing to leave the church because at least internally there's some cultural pushback almost like, oh, you're leaving the church. So that's a big, you're leaving the faith. You're taking a like a second tier calling. All of those things are unbiblical and not true, but it kind of feels that way, at least within that community sometimes. But
and those are also the perceptions that you project on yourself.
Absolutely. Because you just build that up in your mind. There's nothing more important with my life I could do than vocational ministry. And again, it's not accurate, at least to theology, but I'm blown away by how much more ministry I feel like we accomplish by just doing what, you know, we're passionate about and good at, instead of trying to force a square peg into a round hole, as it were. So yeah, being able to make beer and, you know, minister to the community through that is a pretty fantastic job. So.
And I've seen actually some breweries start to have a connection to different churches and different breweries kind of start from churches.
Yeah.
You're seeing a few kind of pop up where, you know, a church will be the primary investor.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, you see a lot of different, I think my childhood church does like beer and Bible studies where they actually go to a local craft beer bar and do their Bible study there instead of, you know, in the basement under fluorescent lighting.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is pretty nice actually.
And I was, you know, again, it's like looking back, like, man, I wish they had that when I was there.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because again, it makes so much sense, even just theologically for that to happen. But we, like most things, you know, the culture around, around an organization or a business or whatever, it starts to evolve. And at some point you kind of dance around what really, you know, you can do. So I'm glad to see that sort of stuff happening. Cause there has been, you know, a stigma too within, church world around alcohol, which is funny. When there's not a stigma around other things, but you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. So.
Yes, for sure. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back on Beer Me Radio. I have no idea what that music was, but it was really beautiful. I was a fan.
It took a hot second, though. There was a bit of confusion right at the beginning.
Jazz kind of stuff, and then, oh, all right.
In comes the beat.
There we go. Well, welcome back to Beer Me on Full Service Radio, recording live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Jane. I'm speaking with Josh.
Should have gone with Yosh. It would have been so much easier.
Josh Chapman of Black Narrows Brewing Company. He's the co-founder and head brewer in Chincoteague, Virginia. So we talked about the mission of the brewery, mm-hmm. encouraging people, you know, to make their local community better, make the world a better mm-hmm. place, which is a beautiful mission that you guys have. Another thing that I really appreciate about your brewery is that you really take local agriculture very seriously. I mean, you see a lot of breweries, you know, they get the berries from the local farm, yeah. and then they do their spent grain, and they mm-hmm. give it to the local farm for the pigs, and then they make those pigs into sausage in their tap room.
Right, right.
You see that, and I'm saying this so bored, but that's actually a really beautiful thing that
people
do.
It is a really beautiful thing.
But I think you guys take it one step further a little bit.
Well, I mean, part of that is, again, it's that holistic approach that I feel very fortunate to kind of had. You look back at your life and you realize a lot of the things that made you who you are all cross over. So obviously the being a good steward of what we've been given sort of mentality, but also just going to culinary school and getting to work with some fantastic chefs, both in Denver and then here in DC with the Neighborhood Restaurant Group. Mm-hmm. I mean, getting to, you know, hang out with Kyle Bailey, you know, he was obviously still there when I was at Energy. Just, I mean, you can't get, especially his seafood focus, which now for me is a whole nother chapter, you know, that I get to kind of pick his brain on while I'm out on the shore. And we have a lot of aquaculturally mm-hmm. focused beers as well, and we're trying to delve into that. But it was, I mean, the thing that I was taught by every chef, and I feel so blessed to have had it like rammed into my brain, was the best meals you can make are by finding the best, most seasonal ingredients and doing the very least to them and letting them speak for themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And beer is food in a glass. Like it's still a food product. So why would that concept not make the most sense for beer as well? So it made so much sense for us to pursue that. It's fun. There's 7,000-ish breweries now. So local beer made locally isn't local beer. And I'm really passionate about that. And I don't like sometimes how craft beer can push that because it's local, it's good. Because A, that's not necessarily true. Like you have to actually make a quality product, but
yes.
B, because it's made locally doesn't mean it's local beer. And there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance. I feel like sometimes we're not AB InBev. We're local. You know, you have to support local. I'm like, you're buying your grain from Germany. You're buying your hops from Pacific Northwest. Like none of the ingredients to your beer are local, but you're screaming, we're not the big guys. We're your money. You know, you're still sending all that ingredient cost, which is the main cost a brewery has, out the door to some other community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brewers are too talented these days, and there's too much good secondary infrastructure to the brewing industry to, you know, to just out of hand say, oh, we, you know, all the local malt is crap, we can't use that, nobody can grow local hops, nobody's trying, nobody's actually pursuing these things. And I don't feel like there's a real data set to make an informed statement like that anymore. Like all of our malt comes is Virginia grown and Virginia malted.
Mm-hmm.
You would never know, you know, oh, they're, I can't believe they're, you can taste they're not using Weyermann. No, you can't, you know. And we have hops that are grown on the shore that we use for a lot of things. The beer that sells the most in the tap room, which is our Scottish ale, ironically, that's a whole different story, but it's all local Eastern Shore grown hops, you know? I feel very passionately that if people want to be unique in their area, to really support their community,
mm-hmm.
And to make the best product possible, they have to start looking at their local agriculture, because that's where the freshest, most vibrant, and the relationships get built. Because I got to have my daughter on a tractor 2 weeks ago. We planted the first malting barley in the Eastern Shore of Virginia, 6 acres of malting barley with this local farmer,
mm-hmm.
Who's already connected with our maltster. And, you know, the three of us are having these conversations. What varietals do we plant? You know, do we want a winter varietal? How are we going to process it? What kind of super sacks do we buy to send it down there? How are we going to malt it? If you're telling me that that's going to make a worse product than blindly buying something from some, you know, distributor, I don't buy it at all. But yeah. But I know I have a very soft opinion on that, so.
Yeah, no, I get it. And you also cultivated your own strain of yeast from oysters.
Yeah, so we, well, I didn't. Jasper Ackerboom and Travis Tedrow, who are geniuses. I leave the smart stuff to those guys.
Those are the yeast wranglers.
They are. Yeah, yeah. They're fantastic. So they've got, they were Bright Yeast Labs. Apparently that was a thing. So now they are Jasper Yeast. And they're working on their build out right now. But when I was still at Blue Jacket, actually, and I was driving up to the shore on the weekends, I was knocking out a fresh batch of Forbidden Planet, actually. And I side-streamed some sterile wort, drove straight to the shore. We grabbed a an oyster from our landlord, who is also a waterman, because our brewery is in a renovated oyster shucking house.
I really love the name. Hold on. Little Bay Seafood Shucking House on Chicken City Road.
You can't make that stuff up.
That's great.
Right? And the great thing about Chicken City Road was that it used to be a bunch of chicken farms.
Yeah.
Then they had a big flood in the 60s, and all the chickens died. And they were like, well, we won't do that again. And that was it. That was the end of chickens on Chincoteague Island. So, but
you mean there was a national tragedy and we learned from it and we did something different?
It's weird, right? How that happens. We didn't just do the same thing over again, hoping for different results.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, so we took an oyster straight from the marsh mud, threw it in the sterile wort, had good spontaneous fermentation. 24 hours later, I let it ferment out, came back in to work on Monday morning, took it straight over to Jasper, and out of the goodness of his heart, he separated out, I think, 150 different, little strains and bacterials and did micro fermentations on all of them. And he found two. So God bless him for the hard work that he did. But yeah, we have these two great, basically kind of saison-y farmhouse strains. One is fruity and floral and one's more phenolic and spicy. But again, it's one of those things where when we talk to people, you get to take them to Chincoteague in a glass, right? And it's a win for everybody. You make a really cool, unique product. It has a great backstory. You get to give people a sense of time and place that they can't get anywhere else, you know? And it's been a lot of fun, especially I got to wear waders for the first time.
Nice.
You feel like an astronaut. It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, man. I love that. That's a great feeling.
Yeah, I'll take it.
And you are starting to distribute in DC? People will be able to
Your beer? We actually just this weekend, just a little bit of draft counts. We had actually done a beer dinner with Sally's Middle Name back in June. So we've had beer on kind of sporadically with them since then. But we're on at the Brew Pub at Rye Proper right now. And then there are some other spots that we'll start to fill in over the next month or so. We kind of got through. So we turned a year old, obviously, on New Year's. And I didn't really pursue any sort of large-scale distribution, A, because we're a five-barrel brewery. We're not large anyway. But B, I didn't know, because of how seasonal the island is, I had no idea what our demand versus capacity during the summer was. And it's a good thing, because we got down to, at one point, two beers in the tap room, where we typically have, 12. So it was fun to watch. We get mostly D.C., Pennsylvania, New Jersey in for the season. And we had somebody walk in. And the only two beers we had on were a beer called Leash. We actually had a bourbon barrel aged version at Snallygaster. It's a wild fennel stout, local wild fennel.
I think at Snallygaster I had the...
You had the Habatit?
Yeah, and it was outstanding.
Thank you. And again, that's all Virginia Pilsner, Virginia grown and malted. And it's Bloody Butcher varietal of corn, an heirloom Appalachian corn that has actually been grown on the Eastern Shore since the 1870s. So it's just our little 4.2% corn lager. And I love it. It's what I drink all the time.
Yeah, it was delicious.
Thanks.
I used more tickets on that than I think most other beers. drink a lager all day.
Yeah. I mean, well, and that's as soon as I'd had one of our ship managers who's never been to Snally before, and we were by the gravity kegs. So he was like, where should I go? Like, is there a double IPA? And I was like, okay, right over here is a Franconian Keller beer. You need to go drink that right now.
I was drinking Rausch beers all day.
Right.
Rausch beers, Pilsners, and that was it pretty much.
Such a fantastic. And honestly, kudos to Greg because he knows, like, he doesn't have to bring those in.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. And they're more work and, and he knows that there are people that'll drink those all day.
Well, and he loves them. That's what I love. You know what I mean? Like, he'll bring in all the stuff that, everyone loves, but he does really do a fantastic job of getting those beers in. And it's what I look forward to at Snally every year. I remember the first time he showed me, we were doing Snally at Union Market when I first started at Blue Jacket. And I got to help tap those, and he was showing me all about them, and you could just see the glint in his eye of this is this sacred thing you have to try. It was fantastic. I loved it.
And for listeners who are not familiar with Snallygaster, we did an episode with Greg right before earlier in October. That was a really, really great episode where he kind of went into what goes into executing a beer festival of that magnitude, which they totally crushed this year on their new location in Pennsylvania Avenue. And I got to say, Also, the beer lineup that you guys have right now, I really, really appreciate.
Thanks.
You've got lager, you got saison, you got table beer, you got tart wheat ale, you have cream ale, you have a scotch ale. Mm-hmm. You've got one IPA, maybe.
Yeah, people come in, and we've had most of the negative comments that we've gotten are that we only have one IPA.
Okay.
Which is I'm kind of fine with. You know.
Yeah.
I think it's a really solid IPA. We brought it to the Emporium this weekend, and I make some different ones every now and then. We'll have two IPAs on, but And again, it's something I learned actually kind of from Greg. He has those five flavor profiles that he puts on the menus. Mm-hmm. Tart and funky, fruity spicy, crisp and light, hop forward, and malty and roasty, mm-hmm. right? That's a great bevy of beers, and that's kind of what we try to have out at the taproom as well. I think it keeps me on my toes as a brewer. And again, if you approach beer agriculturally as a composed bite, almost like a composed sip, how can you only make one thing all the time? You have too many ingredients, at your fingertips to only make IPAs all day long, right? There's just too much great stuff to use that wants to go its own direction. You kind of got to let it go there, and naturally you just get this diverse beer lineup. So
yeah, and there's a seasonality to beer. You're not nobody wants to have like Berliner Weiss in the middle of winter. Well, no. Sometimes if it's New Year's Eve, maybe.
Sure.
Replace champagne with Berliner Weiss always.
Yes. But no, but and you hear sometimes beer's not seasonal. That's not true, because beer is produced by people, and human beings are seasonal. So to say that, sure, beer is not a conscious living thing. Well, that's not true either. But we're seasonal. Beer is seasonal, and drink seasonally. That's totally fine. There are definitely things that I drink in the winter that I don't drink in the summer, and vice versa. There are things that mark the seasons. Like, mm-hmm. I'm really excited. We're going to brew a Märzen in the next couple of weeks when I get back, because we have some local winery just finished harvest. Mm-hmm. So we have some 5 and 6 year old red wine barrels that are fairly neutral at this point. So we're going to, our bright tanks are single walled because it's an old oyster shucking house, right? So mm-hmm. We have giant walk-ins. So it's different than Blue Jacket, where I'm used to having, jacketed brights out behind the bar and whatever. So we have this giant walk-in. So we actually get to lager a Märzen in local oak, until March. So I'm excited about this thing being it's March now. It's like spring's coming. Let's do this Märzen that's been and kind of mark the seasons with the beer. It's fantastic.
Nice. That is awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming into chat today.
It's a pleasure.
Definitely check out throughout DC for Black Narrows Brewing Company. But hey, make a trip down to Shingetig. It's still pretty in the wintertime.
It's our favorite time. So.
Yeah. Well, check out Beer Me every place that you normally get your podcasts. Otherwise, we'll see you next week on Full Service Radio, recording live at the Line Hotel. Cheers.